This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Every day we're reminded that the world is at war. Television and the internet show us an endless stream of carnage and destruction. But it's all carefully selected and managed, intended to ensure we cheer on the good guys and despise the enemy. From here in Vancouver, any war going on is too far removed to concern most of us. And sometimes it takes the immediacy of fiction, well-written fiction, to let us live another life and another time. Joan Haggerty is a BC writer whose new novel, The Dance Hall Years, has just been published. And Joan Haggerty joins me in the studio. Hello, Joan.
Hello, James.
Now, my introduction, I did mention war and how far we are removed from it. Your novel starts at the eve of the Second World War. Can you tell us maybe a little bit about how that affected maybe you and also the characters in your novel?
Yes, well, it's interesting that the cover itself, which is a picture of the outside of the old Bowen Inn, which ran for a long time up until the 50s, it says a saga from Bowen Island, 1939, dot, dot, dot. So war was declared the following September, and the characters there, they look to me like they're superficially in control of their lives, but something is pending. And the first chapter is an idyll. It's the perfect summer when people go to Bowen Island, and Gwen, the protagonist, mm-hmm. is having a delicious time, and everyone is. And I wanted to establish that, and then chapter two starts. This year, nothing is like it's supposed to be, not one thing, because it's in 41. And by that time, the war's started, and the grown-ups all are behaving very differently. It seemed like everyone, I was born in 40 myself, and it seemed like my childhood, I remember so distinctly that everyone was listening to the radio all the time. Everyone got very serious and was listening to the radio. And then my uncle was in Japanese prison camp, and it was like a backdrop. There was a backdrop behind everything, and it was the war. And Gwen says, you know, as it goes on, she's saying, you know, it's all different because it's the war. It's the war now. And, you know, capital T, capital W, because it was incredibly tense. And, of course, everyone had been through the Depression, and that was so hard because, you know, you got the new mixmaster. Don't move the mixmaster. I mean, everything like hold the phone, everything wrapped in cotton wool. And people just, after the Depression and then after the war in the 50s, everyone just wanted things to be nice, right? So, you know, it influenced everything. And then when we move along into the novel and Gwen's swimming teacher, this is fiction. There was no Japanese gardener at the hotel gardens. The characters appeared, the Yoshido family, as I was writing and became very clear. I needed to find out who these people were. They were definitely in this novel. And in this idyll at the beginning, Gwen's learning to swim. And her teacher is everything to her. He's, you know, like he says, you know, just lie on your back because the water will want to hold you up. There's nothing else for it to do. And then he disappears. They say he had to go to, her mother says something like, oh, the Yoshidas went away to another camp. And she thinks that somewhere in Seychelles, like camp is, you know, people didn't talk about it. And so that's a very underlying, profound, it influences her profoundly emotionally, her whole life, because he was so much to her, and then he was gone, and we don't know where these people went. And then another major character in the novel, Isabel Gallagher, her beloved aunt, she and Takumi are in love. They just are devoted to each other from childhood. And the story of what happens to Takumi, his parents, Noriko and Shinsuke, the RCMP get them. But I'm not, Takumi says he's not going to any fucking camp. And, and he manages. Well, you'll see. Read the novel. You'll see what happens to him. I don't want to give it away. But and then these people all come back in. They're major characters in the novel. So, it wasn't talked about at the time. And James, you and I were just speaking about that before we began the interview, how you didn't grow up knowing about this, even in the 60s when you were growing up.
Yeah, well, I was born in the 60s, but my formative years, I guess, would be the 70s and 80s. And
right.
No, I had no idea there was such a thing.
Shocking. It's really shocking.
The Japanese,
like 20,000 people were interned.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking 200.
Yeah.
20,000 people, and yet it's still something that's kind of on the fringes in some way.
You mentioned two of the protagonists, Gwen and Isabel. Gwen is really sort of the heart of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Gwen at the start of the novel? Is she? Yeah, who is she? Tell us about her.
She's six at the beginning of the novel. She's very observant, I realize. But it's her point of view in the beginning, it's unfiltered. She's just taking in. She's taking in everything. And it's somebody, my publisher, Mona Fertig, she tells people it's an epic in the traditional sense of, an epic adventure where you go through this adventure, that adventure, and you learn from that and you apply it to the next adventure and so on. And, the story, she starts at six and she ends up in her 50s, a little bit, almost 60, and it's really about her maturation. It's about, becoming a mature person and what she has to go through to achieve that. And she's somebody who is, I think she's a born teacher, and it doesn't really get to do that until she's in her 50s and has always an idea that she wants to do something in drama, but not anything that's anything to do with traditional drama. And she finds a way into this, doesn't she, toward the end. And so it is about, she is the heart of the novel, and it's about her growth, and it's about her observations, because at one point it's suggested by her psychiatrist that instead of having lovers in her life, and sexualizing her energy, that she uses it to start writing down her childhood memories. And so we get the sense, as she struggles to do that, that here's the book that she writes. So she's right. So we have Gwen writing the book.
Now the book, of course, is called The Dance Hall Years.
Yes.
On Bowen Island. Tell us about the dance hall in the book.
Why, yes.
And
well,
why is that so important?
Well, this dance hall on Bowen Island, it was very famous. It was an iconic dance hall during the war, from the 20s but and the 30s, and then in the war, even in the war, soldiers on leave evidently were knew about Lotus Land, and they were told if they could get leave out here, they should get, you go down to the foot of Carroll Street and you get what was called the Moonlight Cruise, and you get on the Lady Alexandra and you go over to Bowen, and then everyone trooped up the hill to this octagonal shaped dance hall that was on the hill above the tea room. And then you went home after the dance. And it was called the Booze Cruise, in fact. And everybody knew it as the Booze Cruise. But my family had a cottage near the dance hall. To me, it was like a music box, a giant music box revolving on top of the hill. And it had a great influence on me my whole life because, like Gwen, dancing is very important to me. I do a lot of social dancing. And I used to sneak out and look in the window and so on. And so it occurred to me when I began this book many years ago, in the late 70s, really, that to have the stories spin off that axis, that would be the locust, and that it would revolve and there would be another story. And in fact, in the 60s, that whole Union Steamship Resort got torn down. The hotel, most of the cottages, the dance hall. So it was wiped out and subdivided. And I realized that I wanted to recreate the era, bring it alive again. And so in the novel, the dance hall does not get torn down. It becomes like a community center dome in the 70s and so on. So when I eventually told a group of Bowen Islanders that in the novel, the dance hall doesn't get torn down, they said, "Oh, good. It could be our community center. We really need one." It becomes a character, as does the Scarborough House, which was the Yoshidos. The Yoshidos were much more settled and cultured than the summer people, which was a deep irony in their being displaced. And it becomes a character too. The Yoshido House and the dance hall are both characters, and if people read the novel carefully, they'll see that that it's all on one level takes place in the dance hall, because we have steps and exchanges between. There are a lot of couples in the novel of various sorts, and you always have these exchanges and do-si-dos and balancing acts and reversals. The first one you'll see with Isabel and a character called Jack Long, who is a longshoreman, and she's using him as a decoy. But at the very, very beginning of the relationship, they're miscommunicating. They're at cross purposes straight away. It's like a do-si-do there straight away. And the later on, we have a situation where Takumi, and you'll see what becomes of him, but he's struggling to become a sculptor and to turn. Isabel is so with him, and he's struggling to turn wood into flesh. And at the same time, she's having to make some really difficult decisions. And the decision that she makes, she becomes wood. And this is going on at the same time. And then we have the profound misunderstanding between Gwen's struggle to be celibate and Derek. It becomes a disaster for him. Like, for her, what's cowardice turns out to be the last straw for him. Like, there are all these, it's all about balance. There's all the way through the book. And so as I was working, I realized this is all on one level in the dance hall. And of course, it's, you know, a pretty obvious metaphor, the dance of life and so on. But I think it's a little bit more fluid than that. And I hope the music, the sense of the music of the prose, I was really wanting to make that.
That was something I was wondering about, because you're talking about dancing and the fluidity and the rhythms of dancing. Yes, yeah. That is something that comes through in your writing very, very clearly, I thought.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because you have all the way through the situation, you have, oh, Gwen and Garth, one of her students at the end, they have the tent, and they're doing it like, and you have a sheet and you're folding it and you're going back and forth. And then the tree planters, step, step, dig, step, step, dig. So there's dance steps through the entire novel. Mm. And at the end, up on the mountain of Mount Abelard, when the moose come down, and the moose comes down, and then the female moose joins him, and then she takes two steps and turns around and leaves. And I think of her, what Gwen's mother says to her when she's a child, and they're walking through the trails, and sometimes the people from the dance hall wouldn't make the last ferry back, so they were crashed out in the woods, which happened quite a lot. And Gwen looks out to see them, and her mother says to her, "A lady can always pretend not to sleep. A lady always knows when to leave the party. A lady can always pretend not to see." And I think that moose at the end, she knew when to leave the party. So I bring in, it's a dance all the way through, for sure.
You mentioned that the Gwen, really, the novel, The Dance All Years, is Gwen's, it's her novel. She's the one writing it, in a sense.
But it's not really Gwen's novel. I mean, Isabel, I think, is just as important a character. And her mother, I think Ada becomes a much more complex person than we realized she was going to. She does something very courageous. And Leo's, I mean, in a sense, Gwen's telling the story about these people, but I don't feel that that we're entirely centered in Gwen. It's a multiple point of view. Mm-hmm. It's not single person point of view. It's not first person point of view.
What I was wondering is this how the novel really started for you when you began writing it? Was it your way of collecting your memories of as a girl along Bowen Island? Is that how it really started, or did you? I'm thinking, because you mentioned when we spoke earlier that you, like me, you had no idea there was such a thing as a Japanese internment. You came to that knowledge as an adult.
I did. But for me, it starts with the landscape. I was very aware of immersing myself in the cedars, in the sea, in the changing seasons. I started with taking just lots and lots of index cards, recording everything that was happening throughout the seasons. And sort of by going right into that, the characters started to emerge for me. And I was not expecting the Yoshidos. But they showed up, and they certainly wanted to be part of they were a part of the book. There's no question about that. So, and then... Yeah, it was inspired from my childhood, for sure, definitely. I had a very stable childhood, and I think that's very good for a writer. And also, we still have the summer cottage that we've had since 1918, since my mother was 8. And all the old stuff is still there. So it's very stable, and that was a great gift for a writer to be able to immerse myself in that. And through that, be able to remember and recreate the era. So it starts in the 40s, but it goes till the beginning of the 80s.
Yes, and yeah, and it's a beautiful book. I've very much enjoyed reading it, and it's been a delight having you down here to speak with us.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Mm-hmm. I've been speaking with Joan Haggerty. Her new novel, The Dance Hall Years, has just been published by Mother Tongue Publishing. And to learn more, you can visit the website, mothertonguepublishing.com. And you're listening to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, and streaming live at cooperadio.org.